Hello and welcome to What Else Studio. I'm your host, Masao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. Today, we're continuing on our mini-series where we're interviewing people who manage diverse studios. Today's guest is Tanya X Short. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Tanya X Short. As you said, I'm the captain of Kit Fox Games, and we're a small indie studio in Montreal. We just recently released Boyfriend Dungeon. We're also publishing a couple of games like the upcoming Paparazzi and Dwarf Fortress. And so I'm part CEO, part game designer, part producer.
Well, tell me a little bit about your studio. When was it founded? How was it founded?
We started working together in 2013 as part of the Execution Labs Incubator, which unfortunately no longer exists. But we came together as four co-founders. That was in 2013, and we are now eight people.
What does the team makeup look like at founding and now?
Well, we're a team of four people, two programmers, an artist, and then me doing everything else. And we've basically grown to be two of those plus a community manager. So we'd like to be teams of four. Well, we, in terms of roles, we're, you know, half programmers and then a couple of artists, and I tend to do most of the everything else. In terms of diversity, we're at this point, and it's funny how much it changes based on one hiring or one person leaving. But right now we're 50% women, and we have people born in five different countries. My two co-founders both were born outside of Canada, in China and Korea. The Korean co-founder left in February. But it's difficult to go into specifics, but we have all kinds of countries of origin and sexualities, and not everyone is cisgender, and it's a great little team.
Okay. So you worked in other studios before you founded the studio, right?
I did. I worked at Funcom for 5 years before starting Kit Fox. I was a senior designer on MMOs for The Secret World and Age of Conan.
What was your motivation to start an indie studio?
Well, like many founders, it was that or get a job at a big studio, right? I was actually interviewing with Ubisoft and a couple of other studios that spring of 2013. But Jason Della Roca, who was heading up the incubator, saw me at a local meetup of a society, a game dev society that no longer exists, unfortunately. And he said, you know, Tanya, you should really join the program. You should get a team together. And I said, well, what's the deadline? And he said, you have 2 weeks. So in those 2 weeks, I came up with some people that I'd never worked with before. And we had an idea. And we said, let's try it for 6 months. And so that's what we did. And it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. And I guess everybody else was hired along the way.
Yes. We are a team of four.
Two team programmers, of four. Okay.
An artist and me.
Okay.
And then immediately I recognized that marketing and community management was a big part of indie challenge. Like, it was very difficult to stand apart in the indie scene, even in 2013, 2014. And I thought, well, I'm spending literally all of my time doing community management. Probably we need help with that. So we hired Victoria Tran back when we were just spinning up Boyfriend Dungeon. And I also wanted to split the team into two games. And I thought that it would help my mental health. That was actually my number one goal. I thought, you know, when I release a game, I feel like I'm losing my grip on reality. I get so tied up in the launch, and it's so emotionally draining and exhausting. What if I wasn't as invested in each game? And then, you know, it also wasn't as much pressure, because if we didn't perform on that launch, it wasn't like the whole studio was sunk or something. It would only be risking half the studio at worst. In reality, it didn't really work out that way, but I'm still glad, for purposes of stability and company culture and things like that, that we grew to nine people. But there was a little bit of a quote-unquote ramp up to get to nine people. And we did that by having one of the other co-founders, Zhang Wu, who left in February. His game, Lucifer Within Us, also had a team of four alongside the Boyfriend Dungeon team of four.
Okay, so you were four people until you decided to have two games.
Yes, exactly.
Well, plus Victoria.
We were going to be five if we were sticking to one game.
Okay. And how do you hire people?
How do you hire people? It's extremely impossible. And yet there's so many wonderfully talented people out there. I actually started writing a long Medium post on our very specific process that we use for hiring. And then I never ended up posting it because I always feel like I'm not an HR expert and I'm sure it's not perfect. But I do think that there's a lot of steps in there that help us get applicants that people don't normally get. So our process is we write an extremely, extremely minimal job posting. And by extremely minimal, I mean we make the title as open as possible. We make the description sound as open as possible. The requirements should be actual requirements. Like, we actually think if someone doesn't have this, it is impossible they could do the job to a degree of quality with no exceptions. And then even the suggested bonus point things, we also keep to very, very honest bonus points that if you had this, it would be an enormous advantage over even the most superstar person who didn't have that. And what that ends up looking like is actually a very, very small job post, much, much shorter than most similar postings from most other game studios. And then we try to get that as much visibility as possible. We also put the salary band in there very transparently because we want people to know what they're getting into and not have mismatched expectations. And we put it all over social media, which that's one of our visibility strategies, is having a very strong social media presence. Put it on LinkedIn. We put it newsletters, everywhere we can put it. And we anonymize the applications when we review them with both me as someone who tends to be not in that role, but I'll be their perhaps supervisor. And then the people they'll be directly working with also judge all the applications, somewhat anonymized, like we use name acronyms. And legally, we do not give extra points for diverse backgrounds. But we do like to see that someone has something to bring to the team that nobody else on the team already has. Do you know what I mean? Like if they...
A new perspective, new
life experiences, yeah. Perspective, insight into some aspect of culture, the human experience that someone on the team doesn't have, that helps break ties. And it's funny because there's always ties. There's always a million wonderful, wonderful people out there. And it's up to the really difficult choice, the heartbreaking choice is always to only pick one and disappoint five other people you've fallen in love with while you're interviewing them. I'm very easily charmed by people, perhaps, but whenever I interview people, I want to hire all of them because they're all incredible. So if you've ever interviewed with Kitfox and not gotten the job, please know that I miss you very much and I want to work with you. But we actually do a few other things that I think help our applicant pool be more diverse, which is we tend to not only do very relatively short tests to check on skill rather than years of experience or something like that, but we pay for the time that is spent on those tests. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tend to be a very high rate, but it's something that hopefully people can feel good about the amount of time that we're asking for them, whether it's 4 hours or 8 hours. That can be a significant amount of time for people who are overworked and underpaid, which for is sure. A lot of game developers.
Yeah.
And additionally, I think something that really helps is our commitment as a company to sustainable work practices. And I mean, sure, sustainable environment is one thing, but which we don't have that much control over. Thank you, Sony and Nintendo, for mining the world's earth minerals. But as far as our sustainable work practices ourselves, we have not crunched in ages and ages. People did some overtime, I would say for a couple of weeks on Boyfriend Dungeon, but we also have given off all Fridays. And by some overtime, I literally mean like 2 hours one day here, an hour there. Like I think me and Marcelo, the lead programmer, worked for a few hours one Saturday and we were like feeling very guilty about that. That's very unusual for us.
Yeah.
We do not believe in overtime. But we're also like giving off Fridays for the summer and looking at other ways we can improve quality of life, because I feel like it's very, very important in the hiring process and in the company culture to view each person as a person. And I think that gets much harder at scale. Like if I were running Ubisoft, I'm sure our methods of trying to work with literally every single person to achieve their career goals and their growth targets, you know, that just wouldn't be feasible if we had 10,000 employees. But we're nine, so we can. And I think that sort of thing also helps with our reputation among other marginalized people, that they can talk to marginalized people at the company and say, oh, like they're not just making a tweet with a hashtag on certain days of the calendar. They actually are doing right by a human I know. And that goes a lot farther.
And they also see themselves represented perhaps in the team more than other places.
With only eight or nine people, we obviously can't represent even...
Well, for sure, yeah. Not everybody,
but... a big fraction of humanity, but showing that there is a diverse set of people maybe suggests that's something that we value.
Yeah. Let's talk about career growth. So, like, one of the things that people talk about, you know, the difficulties of joining a smaller indie studio is that, like, people are like, oh, well, you know, like, there's nowhere for me to go if there's only, you know, four people and there's already a creative director or a lead programmer. It sounds like Kit Fox approaches that with some probably more unique approach than just like changes of titles and perhaps an online course here and there.
It's a hard problem for sure. We first started adding to our vacation benefits, and we had a wellness credit for people to use on like $300 a year on physical equipment or massages or whatever. We also added a $500 training credit so that people could cross train if they wanted to get, like you said, courses or books or classes or things like that. But I think the thing that's made the bigger change is really asking what kinds of ownership people want in the projects they're on. Mm-hmm. And yes, if you want to be a game director, probably starting your own studio is actually going to be better. But most people don't actually want that in my experience. In my experience, and maybe that's because they don't come to Kit Fox. Maybe it's a self-selection. But my experience is that people want control over what they're making. They want to feel challenged by what they're making. They want to feel mastery and autonomy. And those are things that we can give them, even if it's within certain bounds, right? Like as a game director, I have to work with certain constraints, and I'm setting those constraints to some degree, but reality is also setting those constraints to some degree. Like I know I have to make a game that I feel confident will make back the salaries of four people working over 2 years. So that has a certain amount of math of the number of units I need to sell at what price point and so forth. But the constraints that I give to my team hopefully can shield them from the financial stress of the product design. And instead they can focus on, well, what is the art direction that gels the best with this game direction, that gels the best with this tech? How do I solve this tech art problem without breaking the frame rate and that sort of thing? And I think bigger studios have the amazing advantage of very, very specialized mentorship, which you can't get in indie very well. You can have an amazing, like, world-class mentor at a AAA studio that will teach you everything that has to do with a very particular thing, whether it's rendering hair or procedurally generating fingernails, or, you know, like there's all these different specific things that you could learn that in indie, everyone's just kind of scrabbling to figure out what anything is because we're all doing five different jobs not very well and we're doing them very enthusiastically. And maybe we're good at one thing, but those other five things, like someone at the studio just has to fake it. And the edge of that, the silver lining of the fact that you're working with a team of a bunch of jack of all trades is that you also get to be a jack of all trades. You get to just fix the problems you see. You get to look at a problem and fix it however you want. Whereas at a bigger studio, you'd have to go through five levels of committee, and maybe it's not your department. So you shouldn't even say that's a problem because it's not your job to point out the problems with the hair rendering or whatever it is. So I forget what the initial question was again.
Career growth. How do you approach career growth?
Yes, career growth. So the career growth is very human. It can't be on a chart. Now, the salary compensation, I think, can be and should be on a transparent spreadsheet somewhere that everyone can access and see why, who's getting paid what and why. Mm-hmm. How many years of experience is it till I make this amount or that kind of thing? But as far as actual meaningful career growth, of becoming better at your desired profession, your calling, I think that has to be personalized. I think you have to work with that person and say, well, when you say you want to be a 3D artist, you know, what does that mean? Does it mean that you want to specialize in characters? Does it mean that you want to specialize in environments or tech art or animations or texturing or Blender? Like, is it a very practical concern? Is it a very aesthetic concern? Do you want to be an art director? There's all these things that people could want, but you shouldn't assume you know before you talk to them, because each person has their own motivations, the things that give them satisfaction, the problems that they enjoy solving will be different. And something that I've learned over time is that will also change over time, almost always. Almost always, the things that we think we want to do when we start are not the same things that we actually find satisfaction in. And it takes some years of experience and self-observation to see that, oh, this is what I dreamed of and I don't like it.
Yeah, I find that to be very relatable. I didn't think that I was going to be a studio manager or a producer when I started my career. I have no idea what I thought I was going to be. Like, I came into the industry very obliquely. So like, my first job was a translator and I never even thought I was going to work in video games. So yeah, I can definitely understand how people have an idea of what they want to do and then end up kind of doing something else.
Discovering what you enjoy might be different than what you thought, but also just what you're good at might be different than what you thought. And then the overlap between those things is the ideal target zone, right? And it might shift over the course of your career. Something that was really fun when you started out, it turns out once you're good at it, it's a little tedious. So you want to do something else, and that's fine too.
Okay, so I have another question. This is kind of more of a personal question. So I run a studio that's also kind of similar in size. We have 5 employees. And one of the things that I have trouble with is the fact that because, like, let's say, okay, we're going to add another person. Like, we don't have an animator, so we need to add an animator. I have a very difficult time hiring a junior animator because we're like, well, we can't teach this person anything because none of us are animators. So we get into the situation where, okay, we need to hire someone with experience. And when you start looking to hire somebody with experience and locally, it all ends up kind of looking like very similar candidates. So, you know, kind of the whole, like, maybe we wanted to have more diverse candidates kind of gets torpedoed. Like, do you have any suggestions or advice?
Yeah, my advice to do with is that? Actually to skew more junior than you might normally be comfortable with. And of course that can end badly, but I've actually had really great experiences hiring people who are junior on paper, but then as soon as you see their tests and you talk to them, you realize they just need a chance. Like, they really just need the space and room to grow. And yes, and this is a situation where in a conversation with them, in an interview, I would say, you know, you might grow faster at a bigger studio. You might do better for yourself if you work under a master animator.
Yeah.
But at Kit Fox, you'll get all this room to grow in the ways that you want to. And that might mean that you learn some bad practices, because we're not here to, we won't be able to tell you if you're doing something bad. But you can be self-directed, and some people, for many, more and more and more young people, I think, are seeing that there is an incredible, priceless appeal of being indie, because, and some of that is a misperception. If they think like, oh, I don't have to get up at 9 a.m. or something like that, then, I mean, at least for Kit Fox, we're very traditional in that way, 9 to 5, Monday to Thursday. But as far as hiring goes, it is difficult, especially the positions. The more and more experience that you require, not only are you shutting out diverse candidates that tend to have burned out by the time they're 5 years in, but also even people who are qualified and marginalized will count themselves out. So for example, like, we're actually going to be hiring, almost certainly, we're going to be hiring an experienced artist in the next few years for a big project that we're ramping up. And even though it would probably be quote unquote ideal to have somebody who has experience being a lead artist or an animator, for example, we're probably going to call the post just 3D artist. Probably not even senior artist, even if it would be great if they were a senior artist, because I've discovered so many times, especially marginalized genders, count themselves out and they don't even apply for a job that they qualify for. They meet all the requirements, but they've been hurt so many times by people not believing what's on their CV or questioning their experience, or just their whole self-perception is that they don't deserve certain titles. And so it's become my policy to undersell the title and then learn to even look between the lines of a marginalized person's application to say, you know what, look, actually, they say they only have 3 years experience, but if you counted this, it's actually 10 years experience. And that happens so much, it's ridiculous. But if we had asked for 10 years in the original posting, they wouldn't have applied.
For sure. And how do you, when you're comparing CVs, like, prevent yourself being like, well, we should obviously interview this person that has like 10 years of experience? Or do you interview them both?
I don't mind erring on the side of giving too many interviews and too many tests. Okay. And that's how I end up in the problem of falling in love with way too many candidates. But that's a good problem to have, honestly, when you realize you found 5 or 6 incredible people who would all do the job really well. The nightmare is the opposite, right?
We're a new studio and we don't have a single announced game or a shipped game. So like, we're definitely on the leaner side when it comes to...
For example, getting applications in that case is much harder.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. Yes. Yeah, so that's definitely... In our case, it's kind of pretty much all that... Well, we've only hired one permanent person so far and some freelance, but we've pretty much had to exclusively rely on people we know to give us referrals, because basically we get straight up students, or that's pretty much like I'd say 95% of our CVs are our students.
Students can be amazing. I've hired a few students.
Yeah.
It was for positions that were really crucial. Like in a team of 4, you know, one bad member can drag down the game incredibly, right? Mm-hmm. But for example, my art co-founder, who I'd never worked with before, he had an amazing portfolio, but all he had done was a 6-month internship at Behavior. That was his only job experience. He had done some concept art for a web mafia wars game. And that was it. But I talked to him and I looked at his portfolio. And when I actually talked to him, it turned out he had made games on the side also. Like he had all of these other talents and he continues to be the art master of Kit Fox to this day, right? He's the art co-founder, the lead artist of Boyfriend Dungeon, powerhouse artist. But he was a student basically when he started Kit Fox with me.
Yeah.
So not to say that you should always hire students, but I do think that there is a lot of gold in there, especially among marginalized people, that they shouldn't even have been going to school in the first place. Like they were already incredible, but they felt like they needed the extra certificate. And so they went to school and now they just look like any other student, but they're amazing. And they should have been given a job 5 years ago.
That being said, I'm not knocking students. We actually, one of our prop artists is a current student. He's actually going to CenterNon, and this is his like part-time job outside of school.
Nice.
So yeah, and we found him on ArtStation. Like basically, we're just going through portfolios, and we're like, this looks pretty good. Should we poke him? And then we poked him, and he was like, yeah, I'll take a job. And here we are.
Yeah, so, I think it can be.
Sometimes it does work out.
It does, and it is really tough for those of us with big, you know, networks from bigger studios. We do know some amazing people. And so it's very tempting to hire someone you know, not just because, you know, they'll be amazing at it, they'll do the job really well, but it saves you weeks of effort and headache and money paying all those tests, interviewing all these randos, making tweets and job postings and blah. Like it is a huge amount of work to do the hiring properly. But I do think that it's worth the effort. If I could recommend anything, it would be to reach out to marginalized community groups and ask if you can post on their boards. So for example, mm-hmm. Pixels has a Facebook group. I don't have a Facebook account, but they have a Facebook group and they have a newsletter that goes every 6 weeks or so. And they let people put job postings in there, and that will reach, you know, people of marginalized genders in the games industry and around the games industry. And there are other similar community groups for various types of communities. And that's a good way to try to reach more kinds of people.
Well, I think we've been going for a while, so I think it's time to wrap up. Is there anything you want people to know about running a studio and hiring people and everything we've talked about so far today, or something else?
I've talked to a lot of people, women mostly, who are planning very far ahead before they start a studio. And I don't think everyone needs to start a studio or anything like that. I don't think everyone who is even vaguely interested should necessarily. It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of work. But I do think that marginalized people, again, are more likely to count themselves out of it. And part of that is totally fair, because maybe they don't have the same resources as a lot of the typical indie founders. They don't happen to be lucky like I was, and there happened to be an incubator that would help pay for that first year of salaries. But I do wish that more people would somehow we would find a way, all of us as an industry, would find a way to support more marginalized people starting in a studio. Because over and over again, the reason I hear to not start a studio is that I don't know how to do it, or I've never done it before. And that's literally true for every founder ever. Like, nobody ever knows what they're doing. So like, if that's the reason, then like, F that, you really should go for it. And even if it doesn't work out, like I said, like, give yourself 6 months, try it if you can afford to. As soon as you can afford to, go for 6 months and then just have a backup plan, because that's how all of the privileged people do it. And that's the best situation you can hope for, is just being able to give it 6 months. Mm-hmm. So good luck, everybody.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Masao.
This was a very informative conversation. I'm glad I got a chance to talk to you a little bit.
Thank you for having me. I hope we can talk again sometime.
For sure. Well, we're local, so I'm sure I'll run into you again. This time I'll actually say hi instead of avoiding it. Take care.
Have a good day.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.